Mm-hmm, okay.
You bet.
We're gonna deal with PCA first? Thank you. This meeting of the Senate Energy and Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. We have four confirmations on the agenda today. The quorum is present, by the way. We'll start with Eric Jensen and Eric Gustafson and Dennis Jensen, excuse me, for the MPCA board. If the two of you want to approach the table, we'd welcome brief statements or whatever you want to say, and then open it up for discussions. Mr. Gustafson, you want to go first?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Eric Gustafson, and I was born and raised in Duluth. As a youth, I had the opportunity, like so many other northern Minnesotans, to spend much time hunting, fishing, and snowmobiling. I also spent a considerable amount of time on northern Minnesota lakes, boating, and water skiing. I attended Colorado College and enjoyed hiking and mountain camping in my 4 years in Colorado Springs. I've been a member of the PCA board for 3 years, and prior to that was a board member of Conservation Minnesota, the Minnesota chapter of the National League of Conservation Voters. I believe I bring to the board the perspective of a lifelong small business person and father of two young boys who will live with the decisions made by the PCA board today. I serve on both nonprofit and for-profit boards of directors, do angel investing, corporate restructuring, and consulting for small business owners. I've enjoyed my time on the PCA board and have been impressed by the hardworking and diligent staff. Many issues brought before the board are complex in nature and need to be addressed in a deliberate, thoughtful manner, balancing out the interests of all parties involved. I've also been impressed by my fellow board members and their dedication to devoting their time to learning the complicated issues and asking the right questions of both the MPCA staff and citizens. I believe the PCA board is a necessary public forum for all Minnesotans to be heard and serves a vital link to developing trust in the citizens of Minnesota to know that their voice is heard for the public record, even if not always agreed with.
Thank you. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Gustafson, excuse me. I'm a fellow Colorado grad. Did you go to Colorado College or Colorado State?
Colorado College.
Oh, down in Colorado Springs. Okay. Well, I think we should move him along. I think he's a good guy. Oh,
Senator Rosa, should be excusing yourself?
Colorado College is a beautiful college.
Yes.
One of only two in the country where you do one course at a time, right?
Mr. Chair, Senators, I believe the other one is Grinnell in Iowa, yes.
Wow, how would he know?
Anyway, are there questions from the committee of other natures? Do we have a motion? Senator Rosen moves.
Thank you.
And Eric Gustafson, that the committee moves to recommend that the appointment of Eric Gustafson to the MPCA Citizen Board be confirmed. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Jensen, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm Dennis Jensen. I'm also from Duluth. However, I was born in Iowa. I've been resident of Duluth. Don't throw anything. I've been resident of Duluth since 1979, and my job, it's a little complex. I'm assigned as the general manager of the Duluth Transit Authority, a position which I've held since 1979. And for those of you who are familiar with Duluth, that's the regular city buses that serve the area. However, my employer is a multinational company called First Group, a division which operates in the United States as First Transit. And we operate many contracts around the world. I think we have about 250,000 employees. We have major contracts in the state of Minnesota. We just took over the contract to manage the public transit system in Rochester, if you're familiar with that operation as well. We also operate a fleet of school buses called First Student. I believe we operate about 80,000 school buses nationwide. And we also own Greyhound. When I say we, I mean the company. The division I work for is a much smaller division called the Transit Management Division. Historically, for the company, the Duluth Transit Authority was the first contract of the management company. It started in Duluth with headquarters in Cincinnati. And ironically, over the years, we also then picked up other management companies, including Metro Transit. At that time, it was called the Metropolitan Transit Commission, which we used to run as a private company also. My job is, because I have tenure with the company, they try to utilize the knowledge I have gained over my 40-year career with the company. So I'm an area vice president for the company, and I supervise our transit operations in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Davenport, Iowa, Laredo, Texas. Now, I'll tell you why Laredo in just a moment. And also, we have an operation in Rock Island, Illinois, where we manage a garage. And, of course, I do the day-to-day operation for Duluth. I moved to Duluth from Laredo. I was the first manager for that system when it became a public system back in 1976, 1979. That is now one of the outstanding transit systems in the state of Texas, but it's a lot has changed. When I moved from Laredo to Duluth, the population of Laredo is about the same as Duluth, about 85,000. It's now well over 300,000. And a lot of that has been due to the oil and gas industry, what's going on in South Texas with the fracking industry. And I fly down there quite regularly, and it's really interesting. You used to be able to drive 150 miles and not see a yard light, and now it's like a city, the complete distance from San Antonio down to Laredo as you look down on the landscape. So it's a lot of activity there. Duluth, of course, hasn't enjoyed that economic boom that South Texas has, but it still has its challenges. And we are, as I said, the public agency. We're involved in a major capital improvement, building a new $25 million intermodal transportation terminal in downtown Duluth. We just advertised that for bid last week. We hope to award that bid in March of this year. And it will be a design-build project, and we think it's going to really change the scope of downtown Duluth. Personally, I'm married. My wife's a registered nurse. We have three children. I have a son serving in Afghanistan. This will be his fifth tour. I have a daughter who is a resident of St. Anthony Park down here in Minneapolis, and a son living in Green Bay. I serve on the as a board of directors on the Minnesota Transportation Alliance, the Wisconsin Public Transit Association, by our reason of providing public transit service into the city of Superior, so that qualifies me for the Wisconsin membership. My personal interests are hunting, fishing. I like photography, and as my fellow member here, I'm an active outdoor person. I'm very interested in the quality of life in Minnesota. As I said, I grew up on a small farm in Iowa when a large farm at that time was 240 acres. In my service on the board, I've been constantly amazed at the changes in the scope of farming, the technology that's brought to the farming arena now. And I think that if I had one observation to make as a member of the board, it would be in relation to agriculture, and that is that it seems that we're always responding to the really large concentrated feedlot operations and the implications and ramifications of some of those activities, and we have to be careful that we don't, when we're looking at those, that we don't unwittingly create an environment that the small farmer can't compete in. And I think that's the substance of my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jensen, I was also born and raised in Iowa, so I understand the advantages that gives you and I over those who are Minnesota natives.
Senator, I happen to be born in the same town as John Wayne.
I see that. And you grew up seeing the bridges of Madison County. So with credentials like that, how could we oppose you? So thank you.
Questions from the committee? I did have one. I was trying to figure out when you mentioned earlier that First Transit, do they run the Duluth Transit system and the, you said, one or two other communities?
Mr. Chairman, it is a management company. The division I work for manages public transit systems. We provide the actual on-site manager, which in Duluth's case, that is me. We form a subcorp in Duluth, so we employ every individual at the Duluth Transit Authority, with the exception of the Board of Directors, who are public officials appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the City Council. So everyone that works for the Duluth Transit Authority is actually a employee of what we call AT Management of Duluth. And that was the name of the management company when it was first started, was AT Management Company, acronym for American Transportation Enterprises, back when private companies run public transit before it became economically unreasonable to do so, and then they become public agencies.
So, in effect, the board is a public board that, in other words, your bosses are the board, but your employer is the company which contracts with the board.
That is correct.
Thank you. Are there further questions or anything from the committee? If not, do I have a motion? Senator Brown moves that the committee recommend to the Senate the appointment of Dennis Jensen to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Citizens Board, that the appointment be confirmed. Is there a discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And I want to acknowledge the commissioner of the agencies here, and who newly confirmed commissioner. So congratulations, Commissioner. We next have on the agenda appointments to the Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. And I wonder if Ms. Kingston and also Bill Becker could come to the table. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And I don't know, maybe Mr. Becker wants to go first, since you can speak about the council in general first, if you want, for a minute or two, and then you're going to also speak on behalf of Mr. Rowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bill Becker. I'm the executive director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Have been its director since November the 9th, 2008, when the Constitution was amended to create the Legacy Amendment and the Outdoor Heritage Fund, along with the Parks and Trails Fund, the Arts Fund, and the Clean Water Fund. This is the fifth year of the council. In our first 4 years, we've made recommendations and you've made appropriations for nearly $250 million worth of projects. We've affected or are in the process of affecting, through restoration, enhancement, or protection, 500,000 acres of Minnesota habitat. It's something we're proud of, and I think you, as members of this committee, ought to be proud as well. I'm here representing Scott Rawl. He's a member from the original group of council members. The council is made up of 12 individuals. Four are appointed by the governor, four are appointed by the House, and four are appointed by the Senate. The House and the Senate each has two public members and two legislative members, one a member of the majority, one a member of the minority. We will be in front of the legislature and on the floor here this session with our fifth recommendation. Mr. Rawl, who I am representing, is a punctual member of the council who attends all meetings and participates well. If you remember the getting along with others grade, he has a high grade in that. He's a 21-year active member of the Nobles County Pheasants Forever chapter. He was the Pheasants Forever Volunteer of the Year for Minnesota in 2009. He's the owner of Rawl Financial Services and practices as a financial advisor. He's also a weekly outdoor rider for the Worthington Globe and is a 15-year volunteer firearm safety instructor. With that, other than to mention that he trains dogs and has three fine black labs that we'd all like to walk behind in the field someday, I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thanks for being here, Mr. Becker. I enjoy having an opportunity to talk to you, to visit with you. I'm one of those suburban legislators who grew up in outstate Minnesota, grew up by the Canadian border. So I know kind of what happens, you know, between habitat and between payment for corrections and protection and enhancement. And I'm kind of wondering, what is your take? And I guess I know this is about Scott Rawl, but as long as I've got you here, I have a question. What is your take on the habitat areas of the metro area? Because in my little district, 42, we have 25 lakes. And we actually hunt in my district, and we hunt in Anoka County. They have actual hunts. So I'm wondering, regarding habitat and protection, do you agree that there is a reason to spend some of these dollars for enhancement for habitat in the 11 county metro area?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, absolutely. We've actually done an analysis of where the habitat is in Minnesota. And 5% of the opportunity for habitat is in the metropolitan area, according to our 25-year framework plan. Approximately 10% of the Outdoor Heritage Fund has gone into the 7-county metro area. A larger part has gone into the 11-county area that forms the ecosection that the Twin Cities and 7-county metropolitan area lies in. That being said, it's hard in the metropolitan area. Land's expensive. There isn't a lot of it available. And the participants who run programs in the metropolitan area, even though they've been asked to specifically find projects here in the Twin Cities area to bring before the council, have trouble finding them. I want to, in the context of that answer, I want to make the point that the council tries to find programs that fund the objectives that the council has. And that perform the objectives that the council has, and the council tries to fund them year after year after year. So we have programs with long lists of projects, and getting metropolitan area projects on those lists is hard. It's hard because there are not a lot of willing sellers. It's hard because there just isn't a lot of opportunity. That being said, one of our blue ribbon programs is the Metropolitan Big Rivers Program, which concentrates on the Mississippi, St. Croix, Minnesota rivers. It is designed to protect, restore, and enhance habitat from bluff to river shore on either side of the river. It's worked heavily in the Minnesota Valley. In fact, we have purchased and protected through purchase significant amounts of land in the Minnesota Valley that are reserved for use by youth, special populations, handicapped people and things like that. So we try. As staff, it's our job to encourage applicants to come to the metropolitan area and do work here as well, and we do.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that, and I understand that land is expensive and there's not a lot of willing sellers. But so there may not be as much opportunity to purchase or purchase easements or outright purchase. But when we look about restoring and protecting, and we know that approximately 55% of the people in Minnesota live in the metro area and spend a great deal on this 0.375%. So we always look to restoring and protecting through our county governments. I've seen 2 pages of projects that we could do to enhance habitat within the 11 county metro area. So I would just urge you to maybe look at those. And I know that there's been some discussion in the past about how much the legislature takes from the Lessard SAMs. And I've not been involved in those discussions. But I'm just very concerned about a large, very heavily populated area that does support a great deal of wildlife and does have hunting and fishing. We have a lot of fishing on the metro lakes. They're heavily fished. They're heavily impaired as well. And there's a lot of work to do to enhance and protect some of these habitats for our wild areas. So thank you for your answers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scalzi, thank you for your views. We as staff will do our best to get them in front of the council.
Thank you.
I have lots of, I'm not sure of the order of these. Weber, Dibble, Hare, and Sieben. And I would like, I think we would like Ms. Kingston to present in a minute as well, too. And I don't care if there's no, if there's not objection, we might deal with both of them at the same time as well. Senator Weber.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment and speak on Mr. Rawls' behalf. He's from my district, so at least I can get on the scoreboard against Senator Dibble as far as people being appointed out of our respective districts.
I was calming the addresses.
But anyway, I'm going to say nice things about Mr. Rawl. Please don't tell Scott that I did that or just ruin everything.
Mr. Chair, I understand.
But anyway, he's certainly a very passionate man in the pursuit of that, with his Pheasants Forever activities, and as well as properties that qualify under Lessard SAMS. And actually, I think under his direction, the Nobles County Pheasants Forever chapter, it was at one time, I don't know if they still are, the number one chapter for Pheasants Forever in the country as far as what they've done. And when the time is appropriate, and if you wish to combine the nominations, I would like to make that nomination.
I'll have you make the motion. Okay. Senator Dibble, Senator Hare, and Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just simply want to echo and maybe add my voice to Senator Scalzi's comments. Tremendous concern about the decisions and the process that the Lessard SAMS Outdoor Heritage Council undertakes, which would, by the reports that I get from a lot of folks that I respect and trust, who participate in that process, that efforts by the metro area are preempted, rebuffed, turned aside. And in contrast to your characterization, Mr. Becker, there is no trying and trying by the Lessard SAMS Council, but really an active effort to turn aside any effort by the metro area to get some resources into the metro area, where, I'll add, the bulk of the votes came to support this effort and the bulk of the money is generated to do some of this preservation work that's extremely important. So I don't want to belabor the point, but I do want to let you know, and hopefully you'll let Mr. Rawls know, and Ms. Kingston, hopefully you're here, you're listening as well. This is something that the legislature is extremely interested in.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, in defense of my testimony, I do want the committee to know that we as staff have worked very closely with the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission system to ensure that they had a quality proposal before the council. And we continue to try to make sure that quality proposals in the metropolitan area are in front of the council, whether it be Metro Big Rivers, the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space System, or any other group, such as a Soil and Water Conservation District in the metropolitan area. We do try hard as staff to make sure that the opportunity is there.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I'll just add for the benefit of the committee and others that, whenever metropolitan area legislators take an interest in environmental issues, conservation issues, et cetera, we're told, that maybe not affect the metro area. We're told to kind of mind our own business. But now I'm hearing that, despite the fact that, there are tremendous opportunities in the metro area to do some of this work. And I hear a very different story from the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission, as well as all the implementing agencies that comprises, they just don't get a fair shake at the process. It's not a function of quality proposals, is that the process is preempted quite early on, and they're not even able to bring forward the fullness of their ideas to the full council. Because they just get turned aside. So, we don't need to prove our case here at the table now. I'm just letting the witnesses know and this committee know that we're going to be taking an extremely close look at this issue. I'm fine, but there doesn't have to be a dollar for dollar you know, because that's fine. I'm, you know, in everything we do, the metropolitan area generates more income that goes that gets distributed further, and that's fine. We're one Minnesota. I'm fine with that. But there needs to be some measure of good process and some measure of balance. I mean, we repeat this exercise time and again, in whether it's the bonding bill or the transportation funding formulas or you know, you name it. And that's fine. I'm comfortable with that. But in this instance, it seems to be quite extraordinary. And I'm getting a lot of pressure from folks in the metropolitan area about this issue, and we need to address it because it can't continue this way.
Senator Rosen, on that point?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I welcome the opportunity to take a look at this. I welcome the opportunity to really break down the dollars and see where the funding is going. I think that would be very healthy because I'm actually hearing the opposite. So it's proven, my thought is, and it's starting to prove, that it's going to be somewhat of a metro-rural split this next 4 years. And it's a great concern because we could go down. Anybody who lives in Greater Minnesota has a list of disparity issues, too, that we need to address. My hope is that we will look at this with clear a clear lens and an open-minded lens and adjust accordingly and not just be emotional about it because we are all in, we have to again always think about what's best for the state.
I think it was emotional.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, you have my commitment. There's no emotionalism here. We will deal with the facts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hare.
I'm going to take us aside from that a little bit, and I really appreciate that, Mr. Becker, you are here today, and I'm just going to find out a little bit more information about the council. You know, being that my district, I represent a district that read a lot of hunters, too, even though it's in the metro area, and I wonder, like, is there a What's the representation of your board? Are there, do they have any member in the metro area?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Close enough.
Thank you. One public member, Mr. David Hartwell, is a metropolitan area resident. Two of the legislative members, Representative Lilly and Representative McNamara, are from the metro area. The remainder, I believe, are, another public member, Jim Cox, is from Carver County. So it's about a third of the current members that are metropolitan residents. The House appointees are up for reappointment. We have not heard from the Speaker yet, so that might change before we have our next meeting.
And I also want to add just information from, you know, information material for myself and for the community. Is there a educational component in the council, like as far as engaging citizens?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hall, we as staff served people who are interested in using the fund. I don't think that's exactly what you're asking about. I think you're asking about environmental education or that sort of thing. That is not, has not been interpreted as being a mission of the fund as defined in the Constitution, which is to protect, enhance, and restore habitat. The statute as well says that the expenditures should directly protect, enhance, and restore. And this chain of events from the expenditure to the protection, the council has tried to keep it as short as possible. But I would be more than happy to assist anybody who has an educational program that they would like to submit. We do, for example, have programs that promote best management practices in habitat management. There's a significant program in the package that's coming through this year. The American Bird Conservancy is teaching people how to properly manage their habitat, both public and private. But as far as making it a high priority of the expenditure of the fund, it's a legacy fund. The council views it that way. At the end of 25 years, it's our objective to have palpable results that you can smell, touch, feel, and hear, and that somebody can go to our files and say, where was the money spent, and get in their vehicle or somehow get to the property and see it, feel it, touch it, smell it, and observe the wildlife that's on it.
Yeah. And I really appreciate your information, being that this is just my third week. I just, like, you know, I'm glad that you're here so I can ask you this question. Thank you very much.
Chair, my honor.
Thank you. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Becker, I certainly appreciate you taking the arrows here for the Lassard Sam's Council. I just hope that you'll use this opportunity to be instructive in the future of how you approach the council in terms of the concern that has been expressed, I think legitimately, about the way some of the projects are, the recommendations you're making to the legislature, that you can help to guide the council, whether that's doing a better job of working with local partners, with local agencies, WMAs, whatever it is, that you can really try to build some better relationships in the metropolitan area so that the list of recommendations that comes to us to the legislature we're more comfortable supporting, and we're not getting this divisiveness that you're sensing here today that certainly didn't start this legislative session. It's been around now for a number of years. So I hope in your position as executive director, as a non-voting member of the council, you can help guide the council to, in the future, try to resolve some of these issues up front. So when the recommendations come to us, it's not as divisive.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, thank you for the kind direction. Staff, who's here, and I will do our best to guide the council to take a different look at the metropolitan area.
Thank you. And then one more, Senator Osmick, and then we'll turn to Ms. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to echo some things that have been that I'm concerned about, seeing as you're here. In regards to habitat, I've personal connectivity into some habitat that was turned back from regular, you know, tillable productive farmland into habitat, and I have some concerns about that, in that, you know, there are some areas that are not very productive that make sense to turn back into habitat for wildlife. But the example I know of, and it's personal because it's directly across the farm dirt road from my parents' house out in McLeod County, they had perfectly good, there was two sections of land that was purchased. One was very low land, swampy, definitely was something that deserved to be turned and was would be a good fit for turning back into habitat or being promoted into habitat. And there was high ground, fully drainage, you know, fully tiled out, that was good, productive, tax-paying farmland. And when we go in those directions, I caution you in taking good, productive farmland from areas that should remain so. It helps the county base. It's by moving those into habitat and removing them from the tax base, you begin to load that tax burden onto other properties that are tax-paying within the system. So while I support having more habitat where it makes sense, I think there should be caution in going to places where it is productive and should remain perhaps within the purview of the taxpayer and tax-paying area.
Thank you. Ms. Kingston, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. I'm sweating.
You should have had you go first.
I'm so nervous I can't even tell you, but thank you for that warm welcome. And, you know, most of my business career has been spent trying to bring sides together. There was one brief stint that I did for U.S. Steel where I did environmental management, which was my kind of dream come true. I was raised in and born and raised in Eveleth, Minnesota. And my first outdoor experience that I remember was my dad taking us camping in the what was before the Boundary Waters canoe area. We called it up to the border lakes. And he took me hunting in South Dakota when he told me that I was going to be the dog at age 10. And I didn't really know what that meant. But I didn't want to, I didn't enjoy the choking the birds part, but I did it. But I continue to hunt to this day. It didn't scar me forever, and it really opened up my eyes to the beauty of the diverse landscape that we have in Minnesota. It's a really extraordinary state, I think, in many ways, demographically, geographically. And this opportunity, when the taxpayers and the voters chose to fund this legacy by upping taxes, is so extraordinary, and I'm sure you all recognize that. Other states recognize it. That it's just an extreme honor for me to be in the position of serving on the council and serving as part of the legislature. I try really, really hard to not be parochial. And I spent my college years that kind of dragged on for about 6 years in the Twin Cities. Love the Twin Cities. I have siblings, parents, dear, dear friends in the Twin Cities. I spend time myself. The park system in the Twin Cities is up with the ranks of Central Park. It was, in fact, designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, the same landscape architect. That's where I went to school for landscape architecture and environmental design, and I learned the impact that man's activity can have on the ground. And when it becomes a losing proposition to try to fit square pegs into round holes and picking the right kind of environment to do certain activities. But I did want to just give you my reflections on the last 2 years that I've been on the council. We didn't have anybody from the northeastern part of the state, which is a unique part of the state, but every part of the state is unique. And I have a really hard time saying what's good, what's bad, even when you talk about bad land that's wet and high land that's arable. I know as a farmer, you have to. It has to be that way. But I think it's all good, and you have to make the right intelligent decisions to use all the land that we have to its best capacity. Last year, we spent about 14% on the metro area on the last round of applications. And I'm really, really careful not to be parochial that way. I don't have a negative bone in my body about any of the projects. All of the projects that come before us are good. All of the work that we have to do with this money is all going to be good. It's just a matter of your opinion on what's maybe better in this way or that way. Every project is arguable, and it can be good in somebody's mind. Another one might be better in somebody's mind. Whatever comes out is going to be good because it's all conservation-based. The kind of divisive reports that you're getting is kind of a mystery to me because I haven't felt that at all in the process. And I feel that it's a really, really strong and fair process. That doesn't mean that we don't give special attention to special interest. In fact, Representative Lilly last year made it a huge point for us to pay more attention to the metro area. And as a result, I think that we did. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I did not vote for the Landscape Arboretum Project. Much as I love the Arboretum Project, I spent a lot of time as a landscape architect student there, but it's not wildlife habitat in the purest sense. I didn't vote for it, but the council did. And there's enough back and forth on the council. We're not in lockstep, believe me. There's a lot of healthy disagreement and value judgments going on that we talk about in the public forum, and I think we do end up with a good product. That's not to say that we can't spend more time and attention on working out the differences and getting everybody on the same page. Most of my career, I worked in labor relations. I helped negotiate national contracts for those steel workers in Pittsburgh for U.S. Steel. I find being in the middle of different sides is maybe not a pleasure to be, but it's a comfortable place for me to be. I'm used to being in it. I've worked very, very hard to make sure that there's equity in all of the work that I've done all my life, whether it's my vocation or avocation, and I hope to carry that on for the rest of my life. And I think that you probably have my little bio that's on the website. What I like to do these days is hunt with our dog and make maple syrup at my fourth-generation family maple syrup farm that I think is probably the furthest north maple stand in North America. And the trees have a hard time. The maple trees don't like that cold weather. They crack a lot, so they're not as healthy and hale and robust as they are in Ontario and New England. That's a lot more talking than I expected to do.
It's very interesting, though. Thank you. Are there questions from the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question, but I serve on the Job and Agriculture Committee, and I just want to share a little info. Last time we took a tour at the Department of Agriculture, Commissioner Hedrickson was taking a trip to Taiwan and was asking what should he bring with him. You know, rice, let's see, white rice wasn't the right color. So, you know, I suggest that he should bring maple syrup, and maybe I would recommend he be connected with you on that part.
You know, we're so happy to have people come and visit it. We're not smart. We don't do it the modern way with reverse osmosis machines and pumps and piping and tubing. We have 100-year-old equipment, and it feels like it, believe me.
It's hard work. Thank you. Are there further questions from the committee? Not Senator Weber moves that the appointments of Jane Kingston of Eveleth and Scott Rawl of Worthington to the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council be recommended to the Senate for confirmation. Is there a discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Kingston and your colleagues and citizens put a lot of volunteer time into this. It's clear you always have, and thank you for coming down here today and for your service on the council.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
And with that, there being no further business, the committee is adjourned.